Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on what's popular in the swine industry. By listening to Popular Pig, you will receive invaluable information on the latest trends, news, and research from various experts who guide the global pork industry. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com. Popular Pig is also made possible by
the National Pork Board,
Farm Credit Services of America, Johnsonville Foods, Hypor Genetics, Minitube, Orbit Farm Technologies, Brenneman Pork, PIC North America, Swine Robotics, Neogen, Innovative Heating, and PigEquipment.com. Brought to you by American Resources.
Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Rota, and joining us today is Luke Kearns from Edgewood Locker. How are you doing today, Luke?
I'm great. Doing great. Beautiful day here in Northeast Iowa. How are you today?
I'm good. We are getting blessed in the state of Iowa with 40, 50, 60 degree weather in February. It's insane.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I happen to be a snowmobiler, so I'm not enjoying it maybe quite as much since I haven't been on the sled all year, but that's okay.
You had that 1 week and that was about it.
Yeah, and I screwed it up and I was in Cancun that week, so poor timing.
So thank you for joining us. I'd love for you to just start by talking about yourself, your background, and then we're going to get into the founding story of Edgewood Locker and just the journey that the company, the locker, has been on over the few generations that it's been in business.
Perfect. So again, my name is Luke Kearns, one of the owners here at the Edgewood Locker in Edgewood, Iowa. We're up in Clayton County, right on the Delaware County line here in Northeast Iowa. But I grew up working in the business ever since I was old enough to put an apron on and take packages from a tray and move them into a box. And so I really spent, all my years growing up until I went off to college working in the business, whether it be working on the kill floor or boxing or taking out meat for customers, whatever it may be. And so I always thought I would come right back to the business after college. And somewhere along the line there, I got real interested in the farm equipment world. And so I ended up going to work for John Deere for about 12 years, doing different sales and marketing roles and moving around throughout the Midwest a fair amount. And really enjoyed that time of my life. Got to travel all around the world, go to every continent on the earth except for Antarctica for business, and working with a lot of great dealers and farmers. And so that was good. But as we started, my wife and I started to have a family, that lifestyle just wasn't working quite as well for us anymore. Always had a strong desire to get back to the land in Northeast Iowa here, get back to a little tighter tie to the animal agriculture piece of the world and meat processing. And so in 2019, we moved from the Quad Cities and came back up here and joined my dad and my uncle in the business here, as well as my sister and two cousins.
When you were growing up, do you remember what your favorite job was? When you said you were kind of doing a little bit of it all, what was your favorite?
You know, this might surprise a lot of folks because it doesn't sound glamorous, but working in the kill floor, slaughtering beef, slaughtering hogs. That was what I enjoyed. I was never the guy that could just stand at a cutting table all day and trim. Standing in one spot just didn't work for me. So I enjoyed the variety. From everything from chasing the pig or the beef into the kill chute to getting it washed, hang on the rail and roll it in the cooler.
So how did Edgewood Locker start?
Yeah, so the story goes back to about 1965 when my grandparents, Tom and Joan Kearns, they were farming just a couple miles outside of Edgewood here on a rented farm. They were milking cows. And at that time, they probably, I suppose, had some pigs and some beef cattle as well. But they had an issue on the rented farm where one of the buildings burnt down. And there was a misunderstanding or a disagreement with the landlord there that basically resulted in them not being able to rent that farm anymore. And so that pushed them out of the farming business. They could have tried to reinvest or rent another farm, or I think buying a farm was kind of out of the question at that time for them financially. And so the locker was for sale in town, and it wasn't much of a locker at that point in time. They made the decision that they were going to get out of the farming business and buy the locker and get in the meat processing business. And, you know, I always joke as I give tours when I tell the story that they decided it was a good time to stop milking cows and start killing cows.
What were some of the biggest challenges they went through early on in their founding years?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of challenges, but as I hear Grandma and Grandpa Tom is now passed, but as I remember hearing the stories, you know, I think a lot of it just came down to lack of financial resources at the time. You know, they were operating, you know, back then, a lot of times these plants were in a basement. And so they were kind of in a basement below another building in downtown Edgewood there. And they were struggling to meet the regulations at the time were nothing like they are now, but yet they were struggling to have the facility pass the regulations from the state. And so they were being forced to invest a fair amount of money. So they put money into that. And then a few years later, they were forced to just move into a different facility because that facility wasn't cutting it. And so they just didn't have the money to make it work and meet the regulations. And so there was a lot of local business folks that just floated their loans and said, all right, yeah, you needed a lot of materials from Spahn and Rose Lumber Company. But the local manager of Spahn and Rose at the time just said, you know what, just pay us when you have it. Don't worry about it if you're late for a while.
Wow.
There were a few other local contractors too. And that's one of my grandma's favorite stories that she always tells, is just the importance of one person going out on a limb for somebody and trusting them, and how that, if they wouldn't have done that, we wouldn't be here today.
That's pretty crazy. You just don't see that anymore.
Yeah, you sure don't. That's just not something that happens much. But, you know, it kind of, the story I always remember when I worked for John Deere, working with John Deere financial folks, is the amount of loyalty that John Deere was able to build through John Deere Credit, which is now called John Deere Financial, in the 80s, when there were a lot of farmers struggling through the same sort of scenario, and John Deere Financial went out on a limb for them at the time. And yeah, I don't know, fast forward to where we are today in times. Yeah, that's just sort of thing doesn't seem to happen so much anymore.
So what was the process like when the business transitioned for the first time from the founders to the next generation, your parents?
Yeah, so that transition would have taken place around 1980, right in there, when my dad and my uncle were both graduating high school and moving on. And they had always planned to come back to the business. That was their plan. But another story my grandma tells a lot is how, you know, my grandma and grandpa, they had a lot of other friends or acquaintances within the meat processing business in Iowa. And a lot of those folks weren't willing to let the next generation come in, take on ownership, buy in, and really feel invested in the business. In fact, a lot of them told my grandparents, according to my grandma, that they were crazy for letting the next generation come in and do that. Yeah, especially with them being so young. But that they knew that if they wanted to keep it going and keep my dad and uncle from, you know, doing something else, that they needed to be invested. They needed to have ownership. And so they didn't hesitate at all. And so they were buying in when they were 20, 21 years old.
Yeah, because that can be difficult. If you're expecting the next generation to wait until they're 50 some years old to inherit a business and only have maybe 15, 20 years where they feel like they're running it as they see fit, it you got 30 years there where you can think about what else in life do I want to be doing?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that conversation's not unique to the meat processing business. It's definitely seems like a theme throughout agriculture as a whole. The folks that have the foresight, you know, to hand over the reins a bit, so to speak, to that next generation earlier on, that you, in most cases, that's the right decision. Not always, but it seems to be.
Well, and we live so much longer, right? So you take farming, agriculture, probably even what you do to a degree, that's life. That's my hobby. That's who I am, what I do. And so if I'm involved until I'm in my mid 80s, which is very, very possible and capable. I mean, heck, we got a president who's like mid-80s, right?
Yeah.
That puts your kids at 65 years old before they're truly running it themselves. Like, yeah, that's a reality, like you're saying, not just in your business, but in others, that people don't really get to take over the farm until they've hit retirement age.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just such a common theme. And I know in my story, you know, where I went away for a while, if my dad and uncle and sister and cousins that were already in the business, if they wouldn't have been open to me, buying in within a relatively short time frame of coming back, you know, I'd still be out trying to pedal equipment somewhere. So, yeah.
So you had talked about when we were talking offline how deer was such a pivotal moment for the business. Can you talk about what that was and how many deer you guys process today?
Yeah. So, the deer processing thing came in, I think a little bit in the 80s and then quite a bit more in the 90s. And really it came about, I think, out of necessity from what I understand. For a lot of that, I wasn't around or wasn't old enough to remember it firsthand. But there were a lot of time periods in there where with the facility that we had, they just couldn't keep it full and keep operating with just the demand for processing beef and hogs. And so getting into the deer processing business, seemed to be a really good fit. We're also in a region of the state. Clayton County has more deer here than any other county, or at least in the most recent year, there were more harvested here than any other county. So we're in the right place for it too. That makes a big difference. But the deer business is right now our largest revenue category. And it's one of our most profitable businesses that we do as well. But the reason it's so important for us goes a little bit beyond just the fact that it's a large revenue category and it's profitable. It also helps us with our, seasonality, because we can make deer sausage. We're making deer sausage from September all the way up through May. And so we freeze deer meat and then we can thaw it out as we have the opportunity to make sausage. So it helps level our workload as we may have more cycles in that time frame from a demand for beef and pork processing. But then just the volume that it brings in and the profits from that business, we've been able to reinvest. We've got a new building here, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure. But without deer processing, we wouldn't have been able to afford to build this new building. We wouldn't be able to have the smokehouses we have and the packaging machines we have. And frankly, the workforce that we've been able to scale up to. And so the benefits have really carried over then to us being able to do a better, higher quality job for our customers on the beef side, on the pork side, and also just in terms of the volume that we can handle on those sides of the business.
So how many pounds do you guys process a year, do you think, of deer as a whole?
Yeah, so I'll talk carcass numbers first. So we received in about 3,700 deer carcasses from this most recent deer season. So we're the largest deer processor that we're aware of anywhere around. And then in terms of pounds, we're at a few hundred thousand pounds of deer sausage that we make every year.
Huh. What about when you factor in pigs and cattle and everything else?
Yeah, so I mean, take those numbers. I think this last year was the first year. I have to refresh my memory on the numbers, but what all was included in it. But it was over 1 million pounds of sausage that we made in this most recent year.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot of sausage. And again, it's, the facility we have and the equipment we've been able to invest in is really enabled that. We've grown a lot the last few years in terms of volume, especially with our growth in the wholesale business. But actually, we've stayed steady or actually decreased our number of full-time employees a little bit.
Yeah, whenever we had a farm that we could work with that was in southern Minnesota or southeastern Minnesota or northeastern Iowa, there was a lot of excitement from the team because whoever was going to be running up was going to be surely stopping by Edgewood Locker and grabbing a bunch of meat and coming back and bringing it to the office. And so now when I can walk into Fairway or some of these grocery stores and get it there, it was pretty awesome. That was pretty great. Can you talk a little bit about that growth and what that's been like for you, your team, and just the reputation of Edgewood?
Yeah, I'd love to. So, you know, we're pretty fortunate on that side of the business that it's been a successful thing for us, but it wasn't necessarily an intentional thing so much. And so it really just started when I wasn't around. It's probably 10 or 15 years ago. There were a few local retailers in surrounding towns that said, hey, I'd like to take those products that you guys have on your shelves that have a good reputation, and I'd like to put those on my shelves and sell them to my customers. And so the answer at the time, as I understand, was, okay, sure, I guess we can do that. And so before we knew it, we were in the wholesale business, albeit at a very small scale and without it being our focus. And so that grew kind of naturally over time without a ton of focus. There were no outside sales efforts. We weren't knocking on doors to find retailers at that point in time. They were coming to us. And so it kind of kept steadily growing. And you know, we're blessed that my grandparents and dad and uncle and other family members just built such a strong brand reputation for producing quality products, taking care of customers, that's what grew that wholesale business naturally without any sales efforts. And so
yeah, the product and quality spoke for itself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so that, I mean, at the end of the day, we can do a lot of different things, but if we don't have the product right and the quality right, you know, you're not going to be successful. I don't care who you are, or how smart you are. So, that did it. And so then, shortly after I came back to business in 2019, we were kind of working a little harder on our strategic plans and really decided that wholesale business, was something, it was a good fit for us, but if we wanted to grow it, we needed to do it right. And so, you know, when we started, we were just having customers come and pick up, and we'd throw the meat in the back of their pickup and they'd take it to their store and put it on their shelves. And that's maybe not such a big deal if it's wintertime, but, you know, if it's 90 degrees out in summer, that probably wasn't the best approach. And so, you know, we said we need to start delivering to these customers. We need to invest in a refrigerated delivery fleet to do that work. And we also knew that there were a lot of places where just, you know, them coming to pick up product here would be a deal breaker. You know, that just wasn't going to work. Hy-Vee's not going to come and pick up 5 boxes of meat to put on their shelves. Fairway's not. These other places were going to an hour, 2 hours away. They weren't going to do that. And so we started investing in that refrigerated fleet. And around the same time, we decided to invest in an expanded facility so that we could handle additional volume to serve those wholesale customers.
What do you think it is that makes your product that much better than the rest?
You know, I think it's a number of things. The recipes are tried and true. We're not doing, I mean, we got a lot of flavors of brats, but we're not doing exotic things. So we know what works. We buy in quality raw ingredients, whether that be the pork trim we're buying in, or beef, or bellies, or whatever we're doing. And then we find recipes that we like, and we find what works. We taste test and experiment. And once we find something that works, we just stick with it. You know, like fresh rope sausage. I remember eating as a kid at my grandparents' house, and it's the same recipe today, 40 years later, 35 years later, as it was back then. And so we find what works, we stick to it. And we're not afraid either, I think, to invest in the rest of the picture. So we've never had old junk worn out smokehouses. We've always had smokehouses that do a good, thorough, consistent job. We've never taken shortcuts on ingredients. From a packaging standpoint, you know, there's cheaper ways to package meat that would save us money, but we choose to use a better form of packaging that locks in that quality.
What is your favorite product that you sell?
Honey pork and pineapple sticks.
Oh, okay. Those are pretty good.
Yeah, and they're also one of our best sellers. They're, I think, our number two best seller from a wholesale standpoint. And so, yeah, it's just the right level of protein and sweet mix for me. So, yeah, I love that one.
What is the product on your shelves that you believe is the product that most people don't try, but they really ought to? Like the thing that's the hidden gem.
You know, I'm going to go back to some of the things that I loved as a kid. I mentioned the fresh rope sausage, which is a natural casing pork sausage, mild sage seasoning in it. You know, it's about the diameter of a bratwurst. Just a great high quality breakfast sausage.
Okay. Where do you see the future of Edgewood Locker and just the locker business in general? I believe the government here recently had made a push to try to incentivize more local lockers, especially when COVID happened. And that might even be a fun conversation to get into what it was like to get all of the requests there. But what do you see the future looking like? And yeah, if you can give us a COVID story about basically having anybody and everybody in the world trying to get something processed, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, well, I guess in terms of the future, you know what, we're kind of starting to reach a level of business demand from a custom processing standpoint that is where it was pre-COVID. And so there's been a lot of capacity added in the last few years, a lot of government dollars that have been put into adding some of that capacity. And, you know, there it was done for, you know, a lot of people with the right reasons. But I think in some cases, there's a lot of extra capacity and there's going to be a fair amount of plants, I think, struggling to make things work. You know, one of the big factors driving a decrease in demand right now is simply how high beef prices are. You know, when somebody's looking to buy a quarter of a beef right now, by the time they buy that quarter of the animal and then they pay us for processing, you know, that's $1,000 or more, depending on how big the animal is and how they choose to have it processed. And so that's scaring a lot of people away from buying a quarter of a beef. And so that beef demand right now is down. We're actually not running at full capacity right now in terms of our kill. And I just was at the Iowa Meat Processors Convention last week, and there's a number of plants throughout the state that are really struggling to keep their employees busy and not have to let them go because of what's going on on the beef side. You know, on the pork side, obviously, it's the opposite story in terms of where the markets are. And so that's helping demand some. It's pretty darn affordable to buy a half a hog or a whole hog, whatever it may be. So that's keeping up more. We're keeping busier on the hog side of things right now. But overall, it's not, you know, the sky's the limit sort of attitude that we had or that the industry had a few years ago when you had to wait a year or two or longer to get a processing appointment here. So, you know, if I go back and talk about a few COVID stories, you know, it was a wild time right there in that March, April, May timeframe of 2020 when those packing plants were starting to close, when the hogs were having to be euthanized because there was no place to go with them. And so we made some mistakes through that. We didn't do everything right. but we pushed as many animals through this place as we could. But it was tough when the phone was, I mean, say ringing off the hook. It was as close as you could say to ringing off the hook as there is, and booking animals and trying to manage all the new customer requests while trying to ensure how we don't, you know, take up slots that our longtime customers would want. We didn't always get that right. And people had to wait a way long. I mean, you know, you had to book an appointment before the animal was born in a lot of cases back then, which is ridiculous to think about. But that's just the way it was there for a while. And, you know, so the custom side is started to come back to normal. Like I said before, you know, on our retail side of the business, if you remember back then, Hy-Vee was limiting customers, I think it was to 5 packages of meat they could buy per trip or something like that. And that was during the same time when we had closed our retail store down for a little bit. And so I was doing basically zero managing of the business. And myself and a lot of others here, all we were doing was personal shopping. People would call and give us their laundry list of orders that we would need, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars of product at a time. We'd grab it all off the shelves for them, take it out and deliver it to their vehicles. And so it was tricky to keep up with all that. And it was also unique from a procurement standpoint in terms of where to get our raw materials, because it was, you know, certain things you couldn't get from these packing plants because they were shut down. And so trying to find, you know, we needed this many bellies, this many hams, whatever it was that we needed, and balancing finding local farmers to source animals from that were basically giving them away in some cases to fill that demand with also getting raw materials from packing plants. So yeah, it was a crazy time that resulted in a lot of government efforts to bolster the industry. So a wild time.
Yeah, we bring a couple hogs in each year, at least for the past few. And you probably would have never seen it because there's so many animals that come through. But we do a manganitza Burt Duroc mix.
Okay.
And the fat on that loin because of the manganitza is like 2 inches. It's insane. But it's kind of fun to do some custom stuff like that just to try what it tastes like.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we look at the future of our business a little bit, there's definitely, I would say, a trend to more, you know, unique value propositions based on genetics, based on breed, based on you know, the way the animal was raised. And so, you know, we've kind of got to a certain level, get on board with some of that. So yeah. And the other thing that relates to that, is there's been an unprecedented demand over the last few years for local producers to have us process their animal, and then they sell it by the package rather than, you know, by the half hog or whole hog at a time. Yeah. And so that's a whole different segment of the business that frankly we didn't focus on at all. And we turned most of those customers away during COVID because we had so much demand to do the non-inspected work, the quarters, the halves, the wholes. And we're starting to get into that a little bit here and there, but that is still not our focus. And we don't intend to really dive deep into that inspected processing for folks that are looking to sell by the package.
Well, I appreciate you being a guest on the podcast. Before we wind up here, I have some rapid fire questions, and I'm asking you for a golden nugget, a life lesson you've picked up that you could share to listeners. But start off, rapid fire, what's your favorite sports team?
Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay. So you had a good year.
Yeah, it was a great year. It was a lot of fun. I don't watch a ton of football, but I really got into it this year. Of course, it's a lot more fun when your team's winning. So yeah, it was a good year.
What's your go-to karaoke song if you had to?
Should have been a cowboy. Toby Keith.
What is your bucket list destination for travel?
Bucket list? I'm going to go with Antarctica, because right now it's the only continent that I haven't had the chance to visit. So I need to knock that one off the list.
Oh, that would be cool. That would be, it'd be, you have to be careful when you go, otherwise it's freaking cold, but...
That'd yeah, I don't cool. know what I'm going to do there, but yeah. I want to say I went. So
I think you look at ice and a penguin.
Yeah, probably.
What is, if you could go back in time and have a beer or dinner with any historical figure, who would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to say Ronald Reagan.
Why Ronald Reagan?
Well, I don't want to get too political in here for this, but I. Just the stories I hear, what I read about how he led the country, the values that he was kind of founded in. I just have tremendous respect for what he was able to do.
And what would be a golden nugget of yours, a bit of life wisdom you picked up along the way?
Yeah, I'm probably going to get this quote not word for word right, or I'm going to fumble a little bit, but my grandma always tells a story about at one point in time, the government inspectors were coming in and telling her how to do things, and she never really cared for anybody telling her what to do, especially the government. But it was you know, it was something complaining about how ridiculous it is to be told by the government how to try and run a business in the black when they're always in the red.
That's a good point. Well, I appreciate you being a guest on the podcast, and I wish you and Edgewood Locker continued success, and appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. This was fun. Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Popular Pig. We aspire to learn and grow together through the experience and wisdom shared by our esteemed guests. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues within the swine industry. For more information, please go to popularpig.com to receive updates when new episodes are available. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com.